Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network. It's September 9th, our first show after Labor Day, but I don't care. It's going to be 90 degrees again by Wednesday, so I'm still wearing linen. The New York City mayoral primary is tomorrow, and thank God Anthony Weiner will be out of the news, at least until the next time he's caught sexting. Come on, Carlos Danger, get Snapchat. President Obama asked Congress to vote on military action in Syria. How do you behave when you have the least useful Congress in history? If you're Barack Obama, you keep asking them to help you out. The definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Sorry, Syria, you're on your own. How to behave when you want to go out in a blaze of glory? A SWAT team in Arkansas shot and killed a 107-year-old man who was shooting at them from his tear gas-filled house. If I live to be 107, which I hope I don't, that's how I want to go out. And I would be remiss if in our first How to Behave show since the VMAs, I didn't mention the behavior of Miley Cyrus. How do you behave when you want the world to pay no attention to you? Like Lady Gaga. Get your hammer. It's apparently crab season in Maryland. I'm Brian Kaiser, and this is How to Behave. The Do You Have Crabs Down There show? In my right ear today, Hannah Howard. How you doing, Hannah?
I'm sad to be in my windowless office in Harlem and not in Bushwick with you.
Well, we're sad to not have you here. It's weird, but I feel like you're getting back at me for calling in from Montreal. Is that what you're doing?
Fair enough.
We're even now.
You could call it that.
You were alone in this studio, though, weren't you?
Yeah, and you've got company.
Yeah, I've got company. We got a full house today.
There you go. I'm missing the fun.
Back from the road, our former regular guest and now just a special guest, Rob Neal.
Oh, now I'm special. That is so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we took you for granted for a long time because you were here so much.
I at times like being taken for granted, but that's a whole other topic.
Now, all summer long, Jennifer Peterman was the one we took for granted. She was our guest every single show we did this summer. But it's good to have you back. Where have you been? Tell everybody where you've been.
I've been in Denver at the Ellie Calkins Opera House for the Peter and the Starcatcher National Tour. That's now my full-time job, except for these 2 weeks.
Congratulations.
It's kind of crazy and cool.
Exciting. Yeah,
I'm going to be all over the country trying the drinks and edibles of multiple cities over multiple months.
Okay, as you know, I am obsessed with eating alone, which probably says a lot about my social life, but I'm going to want regular reports from you.
Well, you know,
from the road.
Yeah, I'm there for you on that.
And apparently, I'm going to, whether I want it or not, get regular reports on the strip clubs of the cities.
No,
the
you're
country,
not.
Right?
That is not.
Peter and the Starcatcher is how many men and how many women in the show?
There are 11 men and just one woman on stage. So yeah. there is talk of strip clubs. And we've been to a strip club, perhaps, in Denver.
Perhaps
one called La Boheme. But, you know, just saying, it happens. A bunch of dudes.
We're going to have to do an episode on strip clubs with lesbians, because I went to a friend's bachelor party, and she wanted to go to a strip club a couple of weeks ago. So I had a blast buying lap dances for all the girls that were at this bachelorette party.
That's kind of awesome.
I'm just trying to make it.
I'm
just trying to frame this so that if my mom's listening, she'll think it's okay that strip clubs are.
Yeah,
are the topic.
I mean, there's so many segue points here that you just don't even want to touch them.
Okay, so Peter and the Starcatcher is the show that Rob is in, and it is wonderful. I loved it even before he was in it, and you guys should go see it. It is on tour now. It'll be all over the country
and in New York City,
and it's still playing at the.
Worldwide stages or Dodger New World Stages.
New World Stages?
Yeah, that's it. used to be a movie theater when I came to New York.
New World Stages on 50th Street between 8th and 9th.
Yep.
Go see if you haven't seen Peter and the Starcatcher.
Amazing show.
It is wonderful. I'm skipping all these things I was going to say because we talked so
way too long
about
your
show. Hannah, how are you feeling about summer coming to a close? Is this a good thing or a bad thing for you?
I like this season. It's like, even though I'm not going back to school, I feel like there's a fresh beginning, crisp notebooks, my birthday is soon, the Jewish New Year, promises in the air, feeling very optimistic.
Promises in the air in fall.
Yeah.
Right? The promise of the day is getting shorter.
Leaves,
shorter.
Trees dying.
Yeah. I'm from California, and we don't do humidity out there. So July and August in New York, I've been here 14 years, and I still am not used to it. It is just brutal. Although this year it was beautiful. I was in town for about 5 days in August because I now just leave all I can, and apparently I missed a really beautiful August. All right. Well, we've got some great people in the studio today, so let's
talk
stop
crabs.
Ignoring them and talk crabs. So Josh Morgan is the founder of Hammer and Claws, a Blue Crab Feast being held in New York City September 21st and 22nd. Hi, Josh. How you doing?
How you doing?
Awesome.
Great to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Josh is joined by his handler, Emma.
My excellent handler.
Who doesn't want to speak, but we're going to uncomfortably make her speak.
Hello.
Hi, Emma. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Listeners, if you notice a pause between any question for Josh and his answer, it's because he's looking to his handler for permission to answer every
question. How does one acquire a handler?
Josh?
I guess you have to be from Maryland, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm from Maryland, and I have no handler.
Really?
Is Emma your publicist? Is that what this is?
Yeah.
This is great. Everybody, so Josh, you are from Maryland?
Yeah, born and raised in Annapolis.
Born and raised. Hannah, when did you live in Maryland?
I was born and raised in Baltimore.
That is crazy. But I moved away
in high school. My family moved away.
Yeah, just got out of there as quick as you could. Looked around and said, this isn't for me.
You know, my dad jokes that I still haven't really forgiven him for leaving Baltimore for New Jersey.
Yeah, I imagine.
I don't know if that's an even trade.
Yeah,
but
that's weird.
Our engineer, Joe, is from Maryland. Right, Joe?
I know.
That's correct.
And we just had a bonding moment.
Yeah. He was apparently at a party last night near where you grew up. Is that right, Joe?
Yeah, about three blocks away from Hannah's childhood home.
And are you a big Blue Crab fan, Joe?
I will eat them when I can get them. Let's put it that way.
Okay, well, let's get started because I feel like I'm a total outsider here. I'm not from Maryland, and I don't understand why Maryland crabs are special, and I don't know why they're blue. I feel like maybe something sad happened to them, and I feel bad for them. So, Josh, why don't you give us the rundown on what the Hammer and Claws Fest is and why Maryland crabs are important.
Yeah, absolutely. So, grew up in
how they behave.
Yeah, so having grown up in Maryland, and I'm sure Hannah and everyone can relate who's from not only Maryland but some people, just across the Mid-Atlantic, kind of get this whole concept of, this cultural dining, tradition where, you take these blue crabs during the summer and you pull them right out of the water using crab pots and twine with chicken on the end of them to pull them off the pier, and you steam them, and it's a very communal, familial type of dining experience that everyone in Maryland at some point really has, was exposed to. And when I came up to New York, I really saw just a void in this type of experience. It really is, not only a dining experience, a communal experience, but it's really a cultural thing. People from Maryland would kind of, argue that it's really ingrained in, just being a Marylander. So I wanted to bring it to New York.
Why is that so much a Marylander thing? Are they in the bay?
Yeah, so basically the Chesapeake Bay is a massive, waterway that basically splits. If you, picture your U.S. map, you kind of see it with all these tributaries.
We're going to talk about the map later.
Yeah, all right, we'll whip out the
globe. After the break, that's going to be a big topic.
But the Chesapeake Bay is just pervasive everywhere throughout Maryland. So you either grew up near the water or on the water. So
you either grew up near the water or in West Virginia.
I caught a lot of fish on the Chesapeake Bay one day, but that was when I was eight. And it has nothing to do with crabs. But I just wanted to get in here.
Well,
maybe it was a rockfish, Maybe it was close enough.
Bluefish.
So, yeah, it's such a part of Maryland and, blue crabs, it's like from from you know, that movie. It's like, what does, you know, Maryland do with crab cakes and football? You know, it's just, it finds its way into, you know, pop culture because
what movie is that?
That's The Wedding. What is it? The Wedding Crasher.
The Wedding Crasher. You know, oh, I never,
like,
saw that.
He's like, that's what Marylanders do, crab cakes and football.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things that, like, you know, everybody is just, you know, it's like the norm. So the blue crab is, it's not indigenous to Maryland, but, you know, it is found throughout the, you know, the mid-Atlantic and down in some of the southern Gulf states. But for some reason, Chesapeake Bay kind of became, like, I guess, like, the, in a sense, like the spokesperson for the blue crab.
Yeah, so that was one of my questions. Crabs are available in a lot of other places,
absolutely,
right? But for some reason...
For some reason, I think the populations, like, if you go back into even the turn of the century and, you know, even like the late 1800s, the supply of crab was just phenomenal in the Bay Area. Yeah. And this has to do with, you know, the quality of the water and temperatures and a lot of these things. And yeah, unfortunately, the quality has decreased over time, so supply has been constrained. But there was a point in time when, you know, the kind of crab supply found in the Chesapeake was, I guess, you know, it's like the heyday of crabs.
And that was one of my questions, is global climate change affecting the crabs, or are they overcrabbed, or
I think it's a combination of both. Not being an expert, I certainly don't claim to be an expert on the conditions of the Bay, but we do support the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, which we, you know, is a great organization geared towards, you know, protecting the watershed and the Chesapeake Bay. But it's a combination of overpollution, you know, overcrabbing, you know, just really having no, you know, I guess, you know, appreciation for the Chesapeake Bay waters. And this can go back to, you know, decades and decades.
And so is everybody allowed to crab, or are there limitations on that?
No, like, yeah, there's certainly limitations. The crab season officially starts May 15th, so you're technically not allowed to crab until then.
Okay.
There are also size restrictions. So from point to point of the shell of the crab, it needs to be a minimum of certain number of inches.
You got to throw them back if they're
exactly
too small.
You're supposed to. So there are restrictions in an attempt to try to protect the population, and I think they've made some progress over the past couple decades, but I just actually got off the phone with one of my crab guys today, and they were saying that, you know, unfortunately this season the supply has been very, very constrained. So
really?
There's all sorts of reasons just why the population hasn't been able to get back to where it was at some point.
And is that going to constrain Hammer and Claws Fest? Feast?
No, because I have the best guys.
Yeah, how many crabs are you going to get for... It's next week, a week.
It's
in
this,
2 weeks,
it's
right?
It's 2 weeks.
The 21st and the 22nd?
Exactly. The Saturday, September. Sunday, the 21st and 22nd.
How many crabs are you going to get?
Well, I'm expecting to bring about anywhere from 50 to 60,000 crabs.
Really?
That's crazy.
That's
You know, fun fact, because I did research for this. So the female crab has like 2 million eggs, but out of those 2 million eggs, only one or two will actually become a blue crab.
Really? What color are the rest of them?
The rest of them usually die, Brian.
Okay. Hannah?
That's actually a good fact. I didn't know that.
I was just going to say that number sounds enormous, but those of us familiar with the art of feasting on crabs know that it takes about 1 million crabs for a adult person to become full.
Yeah? Is that true? So are they like crawfish? I mean, they're not tiny.
So the human is the main predator here.
Yeah. Really,
they're big, but the labor to food ratio is real, and that's part of what I like about the whole social aspect of like hanging out and eating the crab. It's such a process. It takes, you got to work for your food. You got to work for every morsel.
And you burn off more calories than you eat while doing it? Is that...
And hence the hammer part, right?
Yeah, hence the hammer. It's I always refer to it as a very, you know, cathartic process, because you literally have to break open this complex, you know, crab. I mean, it's not like a lobster where you split the, you know, tail down, you open it up, and the meat's there. You have to, there's dozens and dozens of crevices and little like corners you have to dig the
meat
out of.
You gotta suck the legs, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's meat all over, but it does take some time and takes patience. But that's kind of like what Hannah said. That's the rewarding part. You know, you put all this effort in. You sit down for 3 hours. You're with friends. You're drinking. You're having fun. But then at the end, or at least at the end of that one crab, you know, when you pull that jumbo lump out, you find like the perfect section of meat. It really is rewarding. And crab meat is, I'll take it over any seafood any day.
So
I love it.
You sit there for 3 hours cracking open crabs and drinking a beet of beer and eating them, and then at the end you go have a pizza.
No, or you just get hot dogs from we're getting
but we're all in agreement that you'll still be hungry at the end.
No, we've got some other stuff too.
There's corn and bread. Yeah,
so we do like sweet corn from the Maryland Shore. We've got Pat LaFreda, who came on as a generous sponsor this year to provide all their custom blend hot dogs. We've got Utz potato chips. We've got some cornbread.
Now,
we're going to be doing steamed shrimp.
This is not really important, but why Abita? Are there no beers in Maryland that could sponsor this thing?
Well, we actually, I had a restaurant back in 2010, which was a Maryland style seafood place. We did crabs, and we had served a lot of Abita beer, and I developed a good relationship with the guys down there.
It's a really great beer.
And
it's good
for the
food is too.
There's some great Maryland breweries like Flying Dog and some other places. But Abita, with the crawfish, like it was kind of a good really match. Like there's some synergy there. Like they get what it's like to get down and dirty and eat some sort of like cultural staple from their hometown. So cool. It was a really good match.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're gonna have to take a short break. When we come back, do you bloody know who I am? This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
This one's called Everything She Touches Turns to Gold by Four Lincolns on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Walking home alone, so enlightened, no one's listening. Everything she touches turns to gold, turns to gold, turns to gold. And everything she touches turns to gold, she's all alone. Your shadow is only a matter of time before it catches you. And everything she touches turns to gold, turns to gold, turns to gold. And everything she touches turns to gold, she's all alone.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
We are back.
Hey.
This is How to Behave at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. So we talked a little bit about the map earlier. I looked at a map and I saw the word Maryland, but I could not for the life of me figure out what shape Maryland is in, what space it takes up. Like, I can see Virginia.
Yeah.
I can see Washington, D.C. West Virginia makes sense to me. New Jersey comes down from the top. There's a little corner of Pennsylvania. And then there's like an archipelago that just says Maryland and Delaware on it. And what the hell is Delaware?
Yeah.
There's no way that's bigger than Rhode Island.
It's in there somewhere. It's hard to find.
It really looks like
it's pretty small.
Like, if they don't keep replenishing the sand, it's just going
to
disappear.
Before Josh answers, I love that that you said that West Virginia makes sense to you.
Yeah. It does.
I thought that was slightly bizarre, but
I have had lunch in Wheeling twice.
Not many people can relate to West Virginia, but
yeah.
That's
so what's
me.
A shape of Maryland?
But so what you, I think what you're talking about, that little like peninsula, whatever you want to call it, that's the Delmarva Peninsula.
Okay.
Delmarva
Peninsula is partly Maryland and partly Delaware?
And partly Virginia.
So Delmarva. Does that really make sense? Like, whose idea was this? Why didn't they just take that peninsula and be like, let's call it
seriously. Yeah.
Delaware and Thomas let's find Jefferson a different place for Maryland?
I don't have the answer to that, but yeah, so and that's why the crabs and like what we do at Hammer and Claws really kind of connects with more people than just Maryland, because you do have the Delaware, you have Virginia, you even got some of the Carolinas where you can find blue crab.
Yeah,
so that's another Louisiana reason. So a lot of people really have a connection to blue crabs.
Yeah, it's another reason why I didn't fully understand why crabs are a Maryland thing, because I looked at the map and I was like, there's no way the crabs all know to stay on the Maryland side.
Well, it's an interesting point. But when you get down to it, you can get crabs all over. You can get them from the Gulf, Louisiana, the Carolinas, like I said. But true like Marylanders and traditionalists, like crabbers, old school, they'll literally claim that a crab that literally was born and raised in the Chesapeake Bay will taste different.
How do the crabs raise their babies in the Chesapeake Bay that's better than...
They say it's a little sweeter.
Yeah. Is it, what's the crime rate like in the Chesapeake Bay? Are the kids shooting Apparently each other like they are in Chicago, or is it is a safe place? Well, if only one in a million babies survive, it can't be considered that safe. Yeah,
apparently it's not that.
It's right. Yeah, I mean, it's predators. It's not like gangs. You know, I mean, it's different.
All right, I'm
going
to ask
Although they're actually, going back to what I, when I referenced the... I got off the phone today with my crab... my crab guy, who not only brings up all the crab, but he brings a team to cook at the feast. He was telling me that one of the problems is a rockfish population. So yeah. A lot of the rockfish are actually, you know,
moving in.
Eating, they're literally like the gangs, I guess, of the crab. So
yeah,
and they're eating them all up.
Is there special thing with soft shell crabs? Is that's when it's a transition time?
Yep.
And that is that anything you deal with in your
so basically just to sum it up so crabs they basically burrow so they kind of hibernate during the winter. It's all based on the water temperature. So when the water temperature goes below a certain degree, they burrow and they go in the sand and they disappear. Then when the temperature rises again, which is why some seasons you have late starts, early starts, depending on what's going on with the water temperature, environmental factors, they all come out of the ground and then they start to feed. And as they grow, they molt and they shed their skin, and they shed their skin according to the lunar calendar.
How do they know about the lunar calendar?
They're pretty impressive.
Perhaps not.
I didn't learn about that until like sixth grade or something.
Yeah, they're pretty impressive.
All right.
So you see a lot of molting going, during this lunar calendar, full moon, and the crabs that are lucky enough and last through the season, they get bigger and bigger because they molt, each month. And that's what we want. And that's one of the reasons why I chose to do a crab feast at the end of the season as opposed to the beginning of the season. Because, number one, they're bigger. There's, they have the crabs that make it tend to get fatter and much more meat in them. And also the value is much better because after Labor Day, which is where the demand for crabs is its highest, it starts to drop off a little bit, and I'm able to get crabs at a more value and pass that value on to people here in New York.
I'm going
to
ask you a question. And you can consult with Emma before you answer if you need to. But are...
No, it's fine.
I just want to make you uncomfortable. Are all the crabs that are coming to Hammer and Claw's feast in 2 weeks going to be able to prove their Maryland residency? Or might there be a little bit of... North Carolina,
Delaware,
Virginia,
crabs.
Delaware going on.
Yeah, no, I mean, the reality of how we bring crabs up is my guys will go out to the market literally the week of the feast. So, starting on like the 18th, 19th, 20th, they'll start to, talk to all their vendors and producers. And, of course, we, try to bring all Chesapeake Bay, Maryland crabs. This is a pretty big event. There's not many people. I mean, I feel pretty confident saying we could be one of the biggest in the country, if not the
world.
How
many people do you expect?
I'm hoping to get about 2,500 people.
2,500 people.
Yeah, the seedings. So basically on that week, depending on what's going on, like I said, the supply has been a little constrained. So they may need to pull some blue crab from the Carolinas or Louisiana. But, in reality, in all truth, we really do try to source all Maryland crabs. But look, I mean, it's a seasonal thing. It's dependent on, what's going on out there and what's in the market. So, we do the best we can.
Cool. So really quickly, tell me. What to expect at the feast? What do I need? Do I need to prepare?
So
how do I behave when I?
So once you get in, it's like no holds barred. You can get into it however you want. But prepare. I definitely recommend a little bit of preparation. And we've got some videos on our website, hammerandclaws.com, as well as a YouTube channel that demonstrate how to properly pick a crab. It can be a little difficult. It can require some patience, but. The last thing we want is people coming in like beating up crabs and wasting a lot of beautiful, Maryland crab meat. So take a little bit of time just to watch a step by step. It's pretty easy once you do it, and that's really the best way to prepare.
Hannah, I assume you're a master.
I don't know. I'm pretty rusty, and I was a child in my crab picking days. But I don't know.
It was
I think
2 years
it's,
ago.
It's like riding a bike or something.
Exactly.
I'm sure
it'll come.
I'll
right,
never really lose it. It'll come back to me.
It'll come right back.
Oddly, having made this podcast this time, I actually was at the first Hammer and Claws. Yep. And the great thing is that people at your table will help you do it right. They don't want you to mess up. They want to give you...
There is a camaraderie about that.
You're at a communal table, and everybody's there. They're there for you.
It's not competitive?
It's not competitive. It's communal, and, I have to say, I still have my hammer.
Do you?
Yeah, do you?
Do you get to impressive. Do you get a hammer with your price of admission and
yeah,
get to keep it?
We've got branded, you know, mallets that I bring in from Maryland. I got a company that like that makes them for me, and we've got thousands of them. So if you want to take as many as you'd like.
Are there souvenir beer cozies?
Don't have those yet.
Souvenir hammers are, I mean, you can get a beer cozy anywhere. Where is someone going to give you a hammer that you can go out and destroy things later?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
But yeah, I mean, as far as what to expect, the, you know, I constructed this kind of event to be, you know, I didn't want it to be kind of a typical carnival type food event that you see these days where you've got hundreds of vendors, you got to walk around, go from booth to booth, you have to redeem tickets. And I wanted it to be all inclusive. Once you get in the door, that's it. You don't have to worry about anything else. So you walk into just a mountain of blue crabs.
And you eat all the crab you want?
You can eat all you want.
3 hours. You have a three-hour window.
3 hour window to eat.
So do people like race in the door and just like, go, go, go?
People get extremely overzealous in the beginning.
Okay, so we're going to put a link up on our website, How to Behave page of the Heritage Radio Network site, to your site so people can find it. It is 3 hour seating sessions next 2 weeks from now, the 21st and 22nd of September.
Exactly. Two seatings on Saturday.
Some tunnel on somewhere.
It's at the tunnel. It's in the tunnel. Classic New York club that is now an opens an office space. I remember dancing to Junior Vasquez spinning at like, you know, 9 in the morning and thinking, this is amazing. And then they busted out the oranges and everything was great.
That's great.
That's awesome. Not a euphemism for anything.
Okay, really quickly before we leave, we've got 3 minutes. I want to play a game, This Week in Behavior. So I'm going to tell you guys about some behavior of this week, and each of you, if you know the answer, yell out your name, and whoever's name I hear first, in my sole and unquestionable discretion, gets to answer the question. Okay? You guys ready?
Yep.
Emma?
Shoot.
You're in?
Emma's in. Can I shout out Emma's name?
yeah. Shout out your own name or the name of whoever you'd like to embarrass. No, just shout your own name. Okay, police in Buckingham Palace stopped and questioned a suspicious character walking across a lawn at Buckingham Palace this week. Who was the suspicious character and how did he behave?
Joe!
Whoa, Joe is here!
Joe in the house.
Prince Andrew.
Prince Andrew, that is correct, the Duke of York. And I will accept a lot of answers on this, but how was he described in the press as behaving?
I believe he got down on his knees and was... had to put his hands above his head, and he was mistaken for a thief, and he said that it was all cool, though.
It was mistakenly reported that he got down on his knees. That apparently didn't happen.
Oh,
he refused. And he was described in the Telegraph as livid and in the Mirror as absolutely raging. So I...
Drunk.
My sources
were. I have not heard anything that... What he did was he apologized later... Or no, the cops apologized, and then he accepted their apology.
Oh, that was it. That
as if he was cool, but he apparently said, "Don't you know who I am?"
Of course he did.
Is the absolute worst way to behave. If you get to the point where you have to say that, you've already backed yourself into an ugly, ugly corner.
Yeah.
I feel like if you guys are here to protect me from bad people, and occasionally you ask me to show my ID, that's not the worst thing in the world.
But there are people like Amanda Bynes who have to say that just because you can't recognize them after the surgery.
That's exactly true. Okay, last week. Are you guys all ready to yell out a name?
Emma.
Yep.
Joe.
Bring it.
Joe is in the lead right now with one. Last week, a man was gored by his pet buffalo. In what state was this, and how many gorings have there been in this state in the past month? Nobody? Come
Rob,
on.
I'm going to
Rob,
do it.
Yeah, you can guess something.
I'm going to say that it happened in Montana, and it was 1,200
in the last month. No, sorry, it was Utah.
Ah, so close.
Where a man was gored. He was probably bored by his pet buffalo, too, but he was gored by his pet buffalo, and it is the third goring in a month in Utah. The first was an elk that punctured a man's lungs. And the second was a zookeeper in an amusement park that was gored by a wildebeest.
In Denver last month, I did eat that buffalo.
Did you? Was it delicious?
Buffalo is awesome, actually.
It's not fatty enough.
It was a buffalo. It's like a filet mignon, but buffalo. Tasty.
Okay, Emma, you can tie Emma. Joe with this one. So can everybody else involved. Joe can take the lead. Joe can take it home.
Do I have a minus one?
No, I give you zero for trying. Mayor Michael Bloomberg. That's the answer to my question. Never mind. I'm going to have to rephrase the question. Mayor Michael Bloomberg accused what mayoral candidate of being what?
Josh.
This week. Josh.
De Blasio.
De Blasio. He accused him of being
of
what?
Being racist.
Of being racist because he has black children.
Because he has a...
Yeah. Apparently...
Only in New York.
Only in New York. Apparently, the best way to help somebody you're trying to hurt is to call them racist because De Blasio is surging in the polls and the primary is tomorrow.
Who are you picking?
See how that turns out.
I am in favor of De Blasio.
Me too.
Are you good, Hannah?
Yeah.
I'll hear your reasoning in a second now that we're 1 minute over. My reasoning is New Yorkers talk a big liberal game all the time. And talk about how they hate the Republican mayors, and then 60% of us go in and vote for the Republican. So there's a little disconnect between what we say and how we behave. And I think it would be great for New York to take 4 years and see what happens when we take our liberal dialogue and we actually put it to work. I think this is a good test. Hannah, what's your reason?
I just think he's the least unappealing. And
he's the least douchebaggy of the
that's
bunch.
It.
Yeah, well, that's a resounding endorsement.
I'm with you on the liberal genuineness. I like that.
Yeah, and I don't know necessarily how genuine he is, but he's doing a good. Do you guys want to give endorsements? Emma, come on.
I'm not too pleased with any of them, but I'm definitely not. Not in the liberal camp.
Yeah. Nobody was excited about Bloomberg.
I voted for Quinn. I voted for Quinn.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Irish lesbian, come on.
Yeah, you lesbians all stick together.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we do.
All right. Well, so you got it. The first ever How to Behave endorsement. Bill de Blasio for mayor. By the time you listen to this podcast, he will probably already have won the primary. But
I think that will have tipped him.
Nonetheless, yes, this will. Our eight listeners question. Will be the deciding factor. All right. Well, that is unfortunately all the time we have today. A big thank you to my guests, Josh Morgan of Hammer and Claws. You can find them at hammerandclaws.com. You can link them through our website at How to Behave. On the heritageradionetwork.org. Rob Neal, back from the road. Go see Peter and the Starcatcher when it comes to your town. I swear you will not regret it. Thank you to Emma for holding Josh's hand through this experience and making sure he didn't say anything that was going to get him in trouble. And to the woman who got a ton of press for twerking all over Steve Jenkins of Fairway Market while he performed at the Fancy Food Show, Hannah Howard. The How to Behave theme is courtesy of John Lundbaum and Big Five Chord. Check them out at BigFiveChord.com. Thanks to Joe Galarraga for engineering and participating in today's show. You can always find episodes of How to Behave and lots of other great shows at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Brian Kaiser, and if I had a hammer, I would not hammer all day long. That's just rude to the neighbors. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.